A massive fine in Europe for Google, plus first, the return of the brand new stock. From Marketplace in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. It's a big week, it turns out, for initial public offerings in the U.S. 10 companies are expected to go public this week. This would make this the biggest week for IPOs in about 2 years, coming off quite a drought for these things. Marketplace's Mariel Segarra is here with me live. Mariel, there have already been a lot more IPOs here in 2017 than last year, right?
Yeah, at a little more than halfway through the year, we've already seen 81 deals. One of the big ones was Snapchat in March, or you might recognize Canada Goose also went public. Last year, we saw 41 IPOs. It was the slowest year since 2009, post-financial crisis. Analysts say companies were holding back last year because of uncertainty around politics, who was going to get elected, what their policies would be, how the economy would fare.
All right. What about this year, though? There's still some political uncertainty, I would say.
There is. But, you know, it's not an election year. The stock market has been at a high. The Trump administration is promising to cut taxes and roll back regulations. So the idea is more companies feel comfortable going public. Keep in mind, we're still not back at the pace of, say, 2015 or the couple years before.
The companies going public this week, any one might have heard of?
Yeah, Blue Apron, the company that sends you all those ingredients in tiny bags so you can cook your own meal, they're expected to go public on Thursday. Also, a bunch of companies you may not have heard of, the biotech firms Avenue Therapeutics in New York, Dova Pharmaceuticals in North Carolina, and a Chicago-based bank called Byline.
All right. Well, we'll watch for those. Marketplace's Mariel Segarra. Thank you. Now, as expected, the European Union's antitrust watchdog this morning lowered the boom on Google. What's unexpected is just how big the fine is, a record $2.7 billion. The EU says Google used its dominant position in the search game to give preferable treatment to its shopping systems and preferred partners. The European Commission says that Google stifled competition. And Google maintains that it's just trying to package its search results in a way that makes it easier for consumers to find what they're looking for. Google said today it will appeal to Europe's highest court. Separately, the EU is still working on possible antitrust penalties against Google for using its AdSense advertising service and its Android operating system to unfair advantage. Now let's do some numbers. The FTSE in London is down about 3 points. Checking stock index futures for the U.S., NASDAQ future down 0.4%, S&P future down 0.1%, the Dow future down also about 0.1%. The benchmark for interest rates in America is up at 2.15%. Would you say that the world of finance and markets needs a good infusion of humanity? Well, let me give you a taste of a fascinating book about how a wider reading of the humanities can help you understand finance and at the same time how finance can help you understand the human condition. It's by economist and Harvard Business School professor Mihir Desai. Professor, thank you for joining us.
Great to be here.
So the humanities can be a teaching tool for understanding things that might seem boring, but actually guide our lives at different levels. I'm thinking, reading the book, insurance. Really? Insurance?
Yeah. I mean, insurance is the most mundane thing for most people in the world. What's wonderful about insurance, as I was writing the book, I came to realize that, you know, risk and insurance are the core of finance. And it turns out that risk and insurance are the core of a lot of people's lives. And in fact, the story I tell is the story of Charles Peirce, who's this remarkable philosopher and the founder of pragmatism, who ends up at the end of his life going around the country saying, "We are all insurance companies," which is very jarring to everybody, and they think he's crazy.
I know he gives a lecture at Harvard, and people are like, oh, this guy's lost it.
And then Peirce shows up, he gives this lecture, and he's deriving the first order conditions for pricing insurance policies, and everybody thinks he's completely crazy. But what he understood is that the problem of an insurance company is the problem of a human being, which is there's chaos and there's randomness in the world, and you have to figure out how to navigate it. And pragmatism is the philosophy which says, go out and sample, get experience, don't introspect. And that is exactly what insurance companies do. So that's the sense in which he meant it, as we are all insurance companies.
This really surprised me. The study of bankruptcy, you argue in the book, is clearly about how to deal with failure. But it's also about resolving, you say, conflicting commitments that we made.
I tell the story of American Airlines, which was the last airline to go bankrupt. And the first CEO said for a long time he'll never go bankrupt because it was – his duty to make sure every obligation gets paid off. Of course, he gets dragged into bankruptcy at the very end. They switch the CEO. The second CEO comes in, restructures all the obligations, guts the pensions, but American Airlines goes on to live another day. So the idea there is, you know, who's the hero of that story? Is the guy who said, I have to stand by all my obligations, but took the company down, or the guy who said, I actually got to manage these conflicting obligations? I trace that and I make a correspondence between that and, you know, Martha Nussbaum's, you know, really remarkable work, The Fragility of Goodness, where she looks at all the Greek tragedies and she says, fundamentally, you know, this is about undercutting the idea that you have to follow duty. Most of Greek tragedies are about people who have these conflicting obligations and it's a mess and you have to navigate them. And she says that's a good life. If you don't have conflicting obligations, you're doing something wrong. So that's the sense in which bankruptcies are really illustrative, I think.
The book is called The Wisdom of Finance, Discovering Humanity in the World of Risk and Return. The author is Harvard Business School professor Mihir Desai. Professor, thank you.
Thanks so much.
Think about it, right? The Pulitzer Prize-winning modernist poet Wallace Stevens was offered a professorship in poetry at Harvard and turned it down to keep at the work he enjoyed at The Hartford, the insurance company. A director's cut of the Humanities and Finance interviews at marketplace.org, where you will also hear how M&A, mergers and acquisitions, can help frame romantic liaisons up to and including marriage. Just don't use the word acquisition. Our producers are Justin Ho, Katie Long, and Daniel Shin. Our engineer this week is Ben Talladay. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.